Well, it's a beautiful night here on the deck, and so it's going to be a great time to sit back, drink some coffee, and talk about something near and dear to my heart, which, of course, is broadcasting. Had a chance to do some fill-in on the radio this week, this last week. It was rather hectic. It's been hectic, and I've been kind of recovering for the past couple of days. But it gives me an opportunity, an idea for a podcast. We're going to talk about podcasting meets broadcasting in podcast 744. So I'm sitting out here and I've got a super delicious cup of coffee, which I made with bottled water, because the thing with coffee is you can't use tap water because it ends up making the coffee taste really bad, because the taste of tap water in general is pretty bad. Then you have these issues with toxins that are odorless, tasteless, and colorless, and then you have this issue with what they are putting in the water to begin with so that it won't kill you. So I end up spending a lot of money, too much money, on bottled water. I will buy two or three cases at a time, carrying it in from the car, up the stairs. You know, it's a big pain. It's literally a pain in the ass. There is a solution to this, and this is my friend Joe Berg telling me the other day that he can make my tap water more pure and better tasting than bottled water. They are coming sometime this week. Here's how it works. It's called Water Butler. It's affordable, and that is all the better. If you want to find out more, check out MasterPlumberMN.com. That's MasterPlumberMN.com, or you click on the Water Butler banner at the top of the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com. Those guys can set you up with a water purification system that's going to end your dependence on bottled water forever. They can do the large water purification systems that go in the basement, or, and they're going to do this for me here, they can put it under the sink. Here's the number, 763-286-8328, 763-286-8328, 763-286-8328. If you live in St. Louis Park, Rogers, Maple Grove, Edina, Plymouth, or Minnetonka, especially if you are concerned about the health of your children and yourself, it is time to purify your water right from the source with the Water Butler. They got 68 years of experience with plumbing, so none of that's going to be an issue. 30 years of experience with water filtration systems. 763-286-8328. That's 763-286-8328. Ask for Joe Berg. Click on the banner at the top of the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com for more info, or visit MasterPlumberMN.com. End your dependence on bottled water forever today. Got to mention that one of the podcasts I did recently, I said, hey, check out the website, because if the world's going to end, I want to make sure I get some clicks before before the world ends. And boy, I got some clicks, and that is much appreciated. So let me tell you, if you go to the BobDavisPodcast.com, you can listen to the podcast right off the page. There is a streaming service, so you can click the play button and listen to the podcast, or usually, depending on what kind of machine you're using, whether it's your phone or a desktop or a portable or an iPad or whatever, the streaming will start as soon as you hit the page, or you can listen to individual podcasts by scrolling up. The streaming will end, and then you hit play, and you can listen to podcasts right off the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com. Also, Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com, Spreaker.com, GooglePlay.com. And yeah, I like the shares and the likes and the favoriting and following and so forth on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, my favorite. And I appreciate your donations at the BobDavisPodcast.com for Mobile Podcast Command. Appreciate that. But really, go to the website and check it out, thebobdavispodcasts.com. As I said, I had a chance to do some radio fill-in this week at News Radio WCCO in Minneapolis and St. Paul. This is a long-term establishment, big radio station in Minneapolis and St. Paul. It's a 50,000-watt radio station, which is clear channel, which means it has one tower. It is not directional. It is a full-strength 50,000-watt AM radio station in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Been here since the 20s and has as much heritage as any great radio station anywhere in the United States. And so the chance to fill in there, and I have never filled in before at CCO, was an amazing experience. And I want to talk about it as it relates to podcasting. Why? Well, it's been an interesting month, because we ended July with something called the podcast movement, And I think probably, at least as far as broadcasting is concerned, the most important thing at Podcast Movement was the Jacobs Consulting effort to bring podcasters and broadcasters together. And this got an awful lot of publicity, at least in the broadcasting trade media, you know, whether it's All Access or any of the other publications. And I would imagine that podcasters talked about it as well. I don't know what will come out of it. I wasn't there, and I'll talk about that in a second. But it's a great time to talk about these two truly different mediums requiring different disciplines and different approaches, and radio in general, and tie it all together with my experience filling in for John Hines, who's been at CCO for quite some time now, on Thursday and Friday of the first week. So it would have been the second and third, I think, of August here in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And I think I'm going to start with the difference in terms of what you have to do a good radio show versus what you have to do a good podcast. I'm a little concerned that broadcasters and podcasters supposedly want to start getting together. And I'm going to qualify that, because what I think it is I think broadcasters have finally discovered podcasting. It's interesting for me because I've been doing this for quite some time. I've been podcasting since 2009. I've been podcasting as a business, selling advertising in my podcast in earnest since 2013. It is certainly not for the faint of heart. It's a very difficult thing to do. It's getting more difficult because there are more and more podcasts, and it's hard for small business people and medium-sized business people and large businesses to distinguish between just a bunch of guys sitting around the kitchen table talking and drinking beer, which, by the way, might be a good podcast, to somebody who does podcasts about current events and puts time and effort into producing those podcasts, such as myself, and there are others that do the same thing. So it's hard to sell advertising in one podcast, and I'm not complaining, because I think what it reflects is the difficulty of making podcasting a business. So 4 years ago, 3 years ago, people in radio laughed at me. In fact, people in radio laughed at me way back at the beginning of the 2000s when I suggested that radio stations were going to have to figure out how to get into podcasting, or at least to take audio of shows, full shows, and put them up on the internet as podcasts. And today, and they called me the podcaster. I'll never forget that. And I was insulted. And then after I left that station some years later, there was a well-known consultant who said, well, you might be up for a while, so you're going to have to do all these things. You're going to have to write for the local newspaper and do a podcast. And I was furious. And I remember I talked to my good friend Kyle Sheely about it, and I had not done, really didn't know what to do. This is in 2008, 2009. And I had to figure it out. And at that time, there were no places where you could go to find out how to get a podcast syndicated. Even the people at the iTunes or the iTunes store, the people at the Apple store really didn't even know how to do it. And I was using iLife, which, if you'll recall, was kind of a rudimentary piece of blogging software that Apple packaged with iMacs and other computers as a part of the software package. And I really didn't even know any of that. I didn't know how to get my podcast syndicated on iTunes or anything else. And so I had to figure out myself. And let me tell you, I was really upset. And I remember Kyle saying to me — Kyle works at Minnesota Public Radio now, and he worked at CCO as well, although at that time he was still over at KSTP. And he said, hey, look, he had done some podcasts for wrestlers. He had set some podcasts up for wrestlers, MMA fighters and stuff. And he said, hey, if I can do this, then you can do this. And it took me a while, and there was a tremendous learning curve to figuring all this stuff out, from figuring out I used GarageBand to do my podcasts. That was the DAW that I used, and I didn't have a decent microphone. And I remember I used a KSM-27, which is a Shure condenser mic, which is really not that great of a mic. And I didn't have, any processing, and I didn't have good preamps. And I put reverb on everything. And I remember I was broadcasting or podcasting from my — actually doing both, broadcasting and podcasting — from my apartment in Uptown. and on unemployment, and it was quite a learning curve to get this thing up and running. And then I went back to work. At the time, I was doing these shows all over the country from my apartment, or I would drive down to Chicago and fill in at WLS. And I was working at BT and WBT in Charlotte and Cairo in Seattle and KTAR in Phoenix and anywhere else that would have me, you know, with an ISDN codec that I could use to go on the air at these radio stations. And so it was really fun because I remember I was on unemployment and, you know, you report the days that you work. They don't ask you the amount that you earn. At that time, they were paying guys, you know, anywhere between $300 and $500 or $600 per show. And so what would happen is I would stack these fill-ins so that I would do middays in Chicago, afternoons in Phoenix, and then at 7 o'clock Central, I would switch over and do nights in Seattle. So I would do three or four stations a day and then a couple on the weekends. So I would be doing LS on the weekends from my apartment. And I'd work a week, and then I'd cash a check for thousands of dollars. And at that time, everybody was unemployed in the building, and we were getting unemployment, and we would just open the doors up, and people would bring pizzas, and it was great. We called it Stewart Hall. That was the name because the Stewart Realty Company owned the building. So we called it Stewart Hall. It was great. It was a lot of fun, and it was great. And I got offered a job, and I went back to being on the air. And I remember thinking, boy, that was pretty cool. Living that way and pretty cool that I could support myself. I actually came out of unemployment with more money than I had when I went into unemployment. I mean, I wasn't rich by any means of the imagination, but I had more money, and I think that's fascinating. And so I went back to work at News Talk, which is Clear Channel at the time here in the Twin Cities, and we had a great show on FM first, and then my friend Tom Emmer, who's now a congressman, and I did this show for 2.5 years at News Talk, and after that, I kind of thought that my radio career was pretty much over. So I started podcasting in earnest, because one of the things that I found out was that the week that I left that station, and they fired me, but you know, that's what happens in radio, but the week after I left the station, I remember I filled in Milwaukee at WTMJ, and people said, oh, you're filling in at TMJ, that's great. And I remember they said, well, we only pay $60 a show. So it's interesting about the radio business that in the time that it took to be the morning guy at News Talk for four years, so from 2009 to 2013, summer of 2013, actually it was literally 5 years ago today, or thereabouts, the bottom had dropped out of the market for guys doing fill-in from their apartments. And now you're lucky if you get $100 to do a show. And it's fine if it's local, I'm happy to do it because it's just fun to do. And I filled in at the Patriot here in Minneapolis, which is a Salem property and a mile away different from filling in at WCCO. And I'm doing this as a podcast because it's something that I think podcasters could have fun listening to and something that I think broadcasters could have fun listening to. And I want to give you guys some content and talk a little bit about the difference between the new mediums and difference between the two mediums and my experiences doing both. Because, you know, I've got 744 podcasts. I came to this from 40 years of experience in music radio in all different formats, and as a manager and an air talent and researcher going in and doing talk radio, which really renewed my interest and vigor in the radio industry, and then destroyed it after, 1500 and then, News Talk. And I was done, just pretty much done with it, and now just kind of do fill-in whenever I can. And I want to talk about the differences in what is required to do a good radio show versus the difference between what is required to do a good podcast and the dangers of broadcasters getting in and ruining podcasting. And I want to talk about that, and I think that's very important. If you did go to Podcast Movement, if you have been reading about this broadcasters and podcasters getting together thing, well, that's important. And to bring it all back around, why do I bring it up? I bring it up because 10 years ago, broadcasters thought podcasting was a joke. And 5 years ago, broadcasters didn't really pay any attention to podcasting. In the last 6 months, suddenly radio companies have become very interested in podcasting. In fact, it's becoming really the first thing that they talk about, whether it's the convention that we have here in the summer, which is the Conclave, or whether it's the NAB. A friend of mine, and you heard him on this podcast not too long ago, my friend Jack, said that he was shocked at the amount of conversation that was taking place at the National Association of Broadcasters Convention on podcasting. So suddenly now broadcasters have become interested in podcasting. And so the two are, I think for the broadcasters, I think they think the two are going to come together. I think that they are completely different mediums. And I'm not so sure that they should come together, and I want to talk about that, among other things. So if you're a podcaster, I think you're going to want to hear this. If you're a broadcaster, I think you're going to want to hear it. I'm going to start with the level of show prep that is required for a radio show, for a major market radio show. If you're a major market radio guy and you're not doing this, you're not doing your job right. If you're a podcaster, this is going to seem ridiculous, but I think it's essential. So the thing about being on the radio is, at any given time and on any given day, if you're doing a fill-in show or a radio show on a major market news talk station, it doesn't matter whether it's a partisan political station or whether it is a news talk station like WCCO or WGN in Chicago, or more like actually WLS in Chicago, which is very personality-oriented but still a news talk. CCO still has a great news department, and they break in with the severe weather, and we, you know, throw it to news reporters that come in or come up and in from the newsroom. And that is a great resource to have when you're working at a radio station. When you work at a Salem news talk, which is not news talk, when you work at a Salem talk station, you walk in and you're the show, and there's nobody there, and it's just you, and you basically talk and take calls. That's the deal. And it's very opinionated. It's very partisan, which is fine. I'm not passing value judgments. And when you work at one of these big news talk stations, you're doing lots of different segments. You're doing, you're throwing it to news people. You're throwing it to the TV news people. You've got features. You've got what they call tags that you have to read. You have to do sponsored time checks and so forth and so on. Some stations have more and some stations have less. I recall that WLS had an awful lot of that kind of stuff where you had to do tags and you had to come on in the middle of a stop set and do a live spot, or you had to do some kind of a tag, or you had to throw it to somebody, or somebody like Ron Majors was going to come up and sit with you in the newsroom for 10 or 15 minutes. And you had to be ready for that stuff, and you had to be ready for what that guy was going to say. So when I do a radio show, and this is something that I developed when I was working at KSTP for the same reason, because we had a news department, I don't know if you can hear this or not over the sound of the bugs out here, but I'm holding about 5 inches, three and a half inches of show prep, which has run sheets and cardboard paper dividing, and every segment is basically written out. Not all the segments I did, when I filled in were written out, but the ones where I really wanted to make sure that I didn't, wander around and say, and everything else, were literally written word for word, and I've done this for years. This is what I do. Sometimes I write podcasts this way that are really hard to do, or if it's an issue that requires, real focus, I would write it out. Now, this one I haven't written out because this one is really stream of consciousness, but it's hard to do podcasts all the time in stream of consciousness, because what you're trying to do is get information into a 30-minute run and get enough information into it that people are going to come away feeling that they've been informed and that you advance the story. Hence, having to write the podcast I did about congressional races. Hence, having to write the podcast I did where I talked about the history of politics in Minnesota. And I'll tell you how that works. I come down here and I start talking, and sometimes I think, I'm just going to talk this. I don't need to whatever. And then I end up going upstairs to my portable and sitting and writing the whole podcast out because I get extremely disgusted with the way I do stream of consciousness podcasts. Now, most people, when they do stream of consciousness podcasts, will go 45 minutes, right? They'll go 45 minutes, sometimes 2 hours. And I don't care what kind of podcast it is, whether it's about motorcycles or whether it's about yoga or anything else. People don't have any sense of time, and they will they won't truncate. They won't work to reach a conclusion within 30 minutes. I do it that way personally because the average drive time is 30 to 40 minutes. We don't need to go on any further than that as far as I'm concerned. If you like to go 2 hours on your podcast, well, more power to you. Go for it. I'm not going to tell people they shouldn't do that, and I'm not going to tell them why they should or shouldn't, because that's not important. But you can't do that on the radio. You can't just talk for 45 minutes willy-nilly with no direction and no stream of consciousness. People who've been doing it for a while can do it. When I used to do mornings at KSTP on Fridays, I wouldn't do any show prep. I'd come in and I'd just put everything aside and I'd talk. I've also often talked about the fact that when you are prepping and you're reading news stories, and I don't mean reading them off your phone or off the computer, but printing up, you know, I went through 2 print ribbons this week and 3 or 4 reams of paper printing up stories to take them out to the yard, sit in the chair in the sun and read, and you end up throwing away half of it. But here's the thing, what you retain are details that no one else retains because they don't do that. Because they don't even read the newspaper in general. So the secret to a great radio show is you have to read, and it takes way more time than people think it's going to take. I would say that I spent 13 hours doing prep for both of those shows. There have been consultants that used to say I was over-prepped because I would read the Financial Times of London, the newspaper, and excerpt articles and underline things. What I didn't understand then